Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we're bringing you stories of pure silliness. We like silly stories because they amuse us, but there's also something a little more going on with silly stories. Sometimes they show us that no matter how unusual things get, no matter how the odds mount up against the regular guy at the center of the story, there's sometimes a happy ending. That gives regular guys like me a little hope, even if the stories are pretty silly. And our first story is told by Debs Newbold. It's about a classic silly stories character named Silly Jack. Here's Debs, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
The daftest man is called Jack, and he's a lovely bloke, really, really nice fella. He's just daft. He's just not got the sense that he should have, really. And he's got a doting wife, long-suffering wife. Let's call her Jean. Jean is as sharp as a craftsman's blade. She's really quick. And so sometimes this makes for a slightly uneasy pairing, but they muddle along as best they can. Now, Jack and Jean live on a small holding, which is much smaller than a farm. And they manage to plant crops and live by them. They've got a single cow. Jean loves her chickens. They give her eggs, sometimes meat. Don't tell them that. The thing is, Jack is not much help around the house nor around the small holding because he's a bit daft. He's the sort of bloke who, when you send him out to water the grass, Jack, in the meadow, and milk the cow for me, he'll go, right you are, and he'll march out there and he'll water the cow and he'll try and milk the grass. So before long, all poor Jean has got, poor big draggled, tied out old Jean, she's got this scrubby patch of ex-meadow that's no good to anybody and a very disgruntled cow. So one day, Jean says, OK, look, Jack, I've got a lot to do. I've got a lot on my plate. And to add to my chores, I've got to build a hen coop, a super coop for the hens because there's a fox abroad, very hungry fox, and we're going to try and remove the fox. I won't talk about how, because it upsets me as a storyteller. But we're gonna send the fox off to a nice fox spa, so he won't take my chickens anymore. And while he's being sent off to a nice fox spa, I'm gonna make a super coop for the chickens. Now you have to watch the chickens for me while I make the super coop, because this coop is not really good enough. I've got to keep them locked in there. I can't let them out in the yard. I'm gonna do everything else, Jack, if you just keep your eye on that hen house door. That's all I want you to do. Jack goes, right, you are. He sits down on the step of the kitchen, right opposite the hen house. The hens are locked in there. Brilliant. She says, right, you're going to have to do this overnight for a couple of days, but then I'll have the super coop and it'll be fine. Nope, right you are. You do everything, Jean. I'll do this. Good. So Jean goes about her business. And Jack, he keeps his eye on that hen house door. And time passes, as it does. And Jean, lovely Jean, brings him his lunch, even though she's got lots of other things to do. He even eats his lunch, watching the hen house door. Time passes. Sun moves across the sky. Jean brings him his tea. He eats his tea, watching the hen house door. Sun moves across the sky. Time moves on. It's getting to bedtime. Jean brings him some supper. She says, well, I'm going to bed now, Jack. Are you all right? Yep, yeah, I'm all right. He's got some very strong tea. That'll keep him up. And Jean goes to bed. Right, keep your eye on that hen house door. I will. Right you are. Don't you worry, Jean. And he's watching the hen house door and he's getting a bit... he's getting a bit tired. Oh, no, don't blink. Thing is, Jack is getting really, really sleepy. And he thinks, oh, what am I going to do here? I can't desert my post. I can't. I know what I can do. And Jack has an idea. We term them ideas loosely because it's Jack. He's got a shed just over there. He knows his way to it. He knows his way around it. So he sidles off towards the shed, always watching the henhouse door. And the henhouse is there, and he opens the door of the shed and he reaches his arm into the shed. He knows the shed like the back of his hand. He finds the shelf he needs. He takes what he needs off the shelf, shuts the door back, always keeping his eye on the henhouse door, mind, always, always watching the henhouse door. He walks up to the henhouse door. Easy to watch it when you're walking up to it. Brilliant. There it is. He takes the screwdriver that he's taken out of the shed, and there are some hinges on the henhouse door. And he... Yeah, I know what you're thinking. I know. But this is exactly what he does. He takes the three screws out of the first hinge, three screws out of the second, pulls the henhouse door off the henhouse, no problem. Hens are like, back to sleep. Jack takes the henhouse door and, always keeping his eye on it, he walks into the house, up the stairs, to his bed. He opens the window so the moonlight comes in, sticks the henhouse door at the end of the bed, gets in bed quietly next to Jean, and he sleeps with one eye open. Next morning, a blood-curdling scream rends the sky outside. It's a scream of anger, not anguish. Jack opens the window, pokes his head out. There is his wife, Jean, looking at him with a face like puce thunder. What have you done, Jack? I gave you one job. Keep your eye on the henhouse door. Look at my hens. Well, what's left of them is strewn across the yard. Just a few spatters and feathers. Jack said, I kept my eye on the henhouse door. She said, I know. I found it at the end of the bed when I woke up. I love you, Jack. I love you so much. Oh, my goodness. It breaks my heart to tell you this, but I cannot, and I will not remain married to the daftest man in all of Britain. I just can't do it. I'm going to my mother's. Don't you try and stop me. Well, Jack didn't have a clue how to. When she had her mind made up, Jean, it was very difficult to stop her. In fact, she could very rarely stop herself once she'd made her mind up. And it broke her heart to pack her little belongings into a tiny little knapsack that big, put it over her shoulder. She wanted all the time to turn back, but she couldn't. She kissed Jack on the head and without looking back at him, she followed her course. Bang, she was going to her mother's. Now, over her shoulder, she called, remember that I love you. But remember that I can't live with you. You're so silly. I can't. You're so daft. I'd only come back if I ever meet three people as daft as you. Well, luckily, it was a long walk to her mother's. She'd gone about a mile up the lane, steep hill, right at the top of the hill. There's a house, squat house. And it's a house in the old style with a turf roof. Meadow grass growing out of the roof. And outside the house, there's a man and a donkey. And I don't know which one is doing worse, the donkey or the man. Because the donkey is braying in real consternation. And the man is at the back end of it, which is never a good end to be with a donkey, trying to lift its hind legs up with all his might. I mean, the man is in real danger, right? Real danger. I don't need to paint a picture. You know exactly why. She walks up to him and she says, are you all right? He said, oh, I've had a terrible morning. I've got a turf roof up there and look at it, it's overgrown. Donkey, hungry. So I'm trying to lift the donkey up onto the roof to eat the turf, to take the level down, you know. It's perfectly simple, madam. I'd have thought anyone could work that out. All right, don't mansplain it to me, says Jean. No, I know what you mean. There might be another way about this, though, if you don't mind me advising. Well, all right then, it's been a long morning. What do you got? Well, what have you got? Have you got a scythe? Have you got a ladder? Well, yes. Off he goes to get the scythe and the ladder, brings it back. He's got no idea what she's going to do with it. She puts down a little tiny knapsack. She props the ladder up against the roof. She gets the scythe, she gathers her skirts, she totters up the ladder, nimbly and deftly, on the roof. Practiced hand, because she's very good at scything. Jack always messes it up, you see. She cuts the grass. She throws it down to the donkey. The donkey is chomping away with a smile. Have you ever seen a donkey smile? It's a lovely sight. Donkey's chomping away happily. Turf roof lovely and trimmed. The man goes, this is amazing. As she comes down the ladder, how can I ever thank you? I tell you what, I think I've got three gold coins in my pocket. Would you like them? I certainly would, says Mrs. Jack. And then Jean puts the gold coins in her pocket. She picks up a teeny tiny knapsack and she bids the man farewell as he gets out the Times crossword, the newspaper, sits down in a deck chair. He's got the rest of the morning to himself, hasn't he? She walks away thinking, goodness me, he's quite silly, isn't he? He's quite daft. Meet all sorts, don't you? Oh, and then she remembers that she's leaving Jack and she's got to go to her mother's, so she puts on a bit more of a pace. About a mile later, she crosses a little river just down the other side of the hill and she hears some voices. Many voices raised, and the voices are saying, have you got it? Have you got it? Have you got it? No, I haven't got it. Oh, hold on to it. Ah, it's getting away. Have you got it? No, I haven't got it. I've got it. Oh, my goodness. She comes around this corner. She sees an array of villagers all together, and they've got their arms around something, and the man at the very front of this line of visitors is really struggling with something. And she puts down a knapsack, and she sees that it's an enormous eel. Huge, giant eels, such as you get in stories like these. These eels terrorise communities, and this eel is no exception. Mrs. Jack, our Jean, goes up to these villagers, and she says to the man at the head of the eel, who's got it, its mouth clamped shut in his biceps, but he's really struggling, and she says, what are you doing? I'm sorry, we've got to get this eel to the sea. But the sea is miles away. Why are you taking the eel to the sea? Surely it can get there by itself. No, we're taking it. It's been terrorising our community. It's been nibbling the toes of the children every full moon. We can't have them sleeping safe in their beds, so we're taking it to the sea. Well, it'll only find its way back, says Jean. What? Why are you taking it to the sea? We're taking it to the sea because we're going to drown it. Okay. The thing is, you see, eels, they can swim, can't they? You know, maybe there's another way. Do you think so? Yeah, I think so. Have you got an axe? I don't know. Have you got an axe? Have you got an axe? Have you got an axe? The call goes down the eel. Someone at the tail end has an axe. I've got an axe. I've got an axe. They pass it up. Jean takes hold of the axe. Okay, could you put the eel's head on that stone there? Now, if you're squeamish, don't listen. But if you like barbecued eel, knock yourself out. Could you just hold the eel's head down on that stone? And the man just manages it, and he gets a couple of friends to help him. Hold it still. Are you ready? Shock! The axe comes down. The eel is cleanly slaughtered. No pain. Very humane. Head rolls off. Stillness. And then a shout of triumph from everybody. You've saved our village. Oh my goodness, that's wonderful. How can we thank it? They do a quick whip round and they manage to get two bags of gold between them. It's quite a rich village. And they hand it to Jean. Will this do? She says, I think it will. Thank you very much. Wonderful. And she picks up her knapsack and she walks off as they set about filleting this eel. They're going to have eel barbecue for months and months. And as she walks off, she thinks, that fella at the head of the eel, he was a bit daft, wasn't he? Oh, you meet all sorts, don't you? It's an interesting world. It's a rich tapestry. But then she remembers she's got to leave Jack and she's on her way to her mother's. So she puts on a bit more of a spurt. And at length, she reaches the town where she was born, where her mother lives, right at the end of the village square, a little green door. She sees it in the distance, and as she does, her heart sinks, because now she's about to become a fully separated woman when she steps across that threshold, and she's really sad about it, but she just can't live with the daftest bloke in all of England. Britain, probably. So she makes her way through the market square. She knows this market square very well, and she's never seen a hubbub such as the one she sees as she enters. There's a fella, young lad, he's about 17, and he's running about the town square, going up to people saying, have you seen me? 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 Have you seen me, madam? Have you seen me? I mean, everybody who he talks to looks at him like you're looking at me now. Like, what are you talking about? Of course I can see, I've just seen you. Anyway, he's full of panic. And Jean thinks, oh, I could help him out, buy him a cup of tea or something. I've got some gold. I could. Goes up to him and she says, hey, excuse me, young man, are you all right? And he said, oh, I've had a terrible morning. I'm very forgetful, you see. I'm dreadfully forgetful. But my mother, she bought me this notebook here. And he holds up his arm and there, tied by string to his arm, is a little notebook. So I can write everything down, you know, because I lose things, you see. So last night, for example, when I got undressed for bed, you know, I took off my shirt and I hung it over the chair and I wrote in my notebook, shirt on back of chair. I took off my boots, I put them under the chair and I wrote in my notebook, boots under chair. Took off my trousers, yes, folded them up nice like, put them on the chair, wrote in my notebook, trousers on chair. And then I got into bed, but this is the good bit, you see, I'm dead clever, me. Before I turned the light out, I wrote a me in bed. And then I went to sleep, had a lovely night's sleep, woke up this morning, got up, and I looked in my notebook because I had to get dressed, didn't I? And the first thing that was written down was shirt on back of chair. And there it was. It's wonderful. I always lose my shirt. I put it on. And then I saw boots under bed. And they were there. They were just waiting for me. Better put my trousers on first, though. Where are they? Oh, it said in my notebook, trousers on chair. And there they were. Put my trousers on, laced up my boots, then saw at the bottom of the notebook, me in bed. But I wasn't there. So I looked everywhere, you know. I looked under the bed. I looked in the wardrobe. I even looked downstairs in my mother's bedroom. I'm not supposed to go in there, but I did. And then I went downstairs into the kitchen. I said to my mother, "Mother, have you seen me?" And she looked at me like I was, well, she panicked me, frankly. So I came to town and now I've been asking everybody, "Have you seen me?" And nobody has said they have. They just look at me like this. And now I think I've lost myself and I don't know what to do. Jean says, "First you have to take a deep breath. And then, listen to me, I think I can help you. I know this town ever so well. There are lots and lots of shops. I want to take you to one." So she takes him by the hand and she leads him to a shop window, not that far from her mother's house. And this shop window has beautiful things for sale, huge gilt-framed things for sale in the shop window. What do you think that shop sold?
Mirrors.
Of course, mirrors, you see. You're not daft, are you? She stands him in front of the mirror and he goes, "Oh! I was inside my clothes all the time! Oh, how can I ever thank you? Here, I don't know where that came from. Here's a gold coin. Thank you very much," says Jean. And she leaves him just experimenting with movement. Expressive dance in front of the mirror. Anyway, she walks towards her mother's green door and thinks, "Oh, well, that's it, isn't it? About to knock on the door. About to explain to my mother what I'm doing." Well, it's been an eventful journey, hasn't it? Oh, there's that fella. I mean, really, he's daft, isn't it? Hang on a minute. The fella who lost himself. The fella with the eel. The fella with the donkey. That's three people dafter than my Jack. I can go home! She turns on her heel. Just as she gets to her mother's house, she runs back through the square. The fella's now doing a little bit of this in front of the mirror. She runs out through the square, up towards the base of the hill where the stream is, and the villagers are having a lovely barbecue. The smell of eel wafts all over. She's quite hungry, but she doesn't stop to eat. She runs up the hill, gets to the top of the hill, sees the squat house. The man has finished the Times crossword. He's now going on to the Guardian crossword. He's very happy in his deck chair. She slides down that hill. Back to her house. Jack is there. He has erected a super coop, but it looks like an absolute travesty of chicken wire and wood. Of course it does, but it doesn't matter. It's the most wonderful super coop she's ever seen, although it doesn't actually have a henhouse door, so it's not going to work. But never mind. She throws her arms around Jack. She kisses him. She said, "Oh, Jack, 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 I'm so happy to be back. I finally found three fellas dafter than you." He said, "Does that mean you can stay?" "Yes, I can. And here, look, we've got some gold. I'm going to hire a carpenter just to do a little bit of extra design on the super coop, if that's all right." "Oh, that's fine," says Jack. And the two of them, they live happily, but slightly daftly, ever, ever after. Thank you.
That was Debs Newbold with Silly Jack. You know, Silly Jack's wife thought he was the silliest person around until she looked around to find that there were silly people all over the place. And like Silly Jack's wife, sometimes I think there's something or another that's true just of myself or someone close to me. But then I look around and find it's true of other folks too. When I was 12 years old, I stepped onto stage for the first time in a play. It was a church production of The Sound of Music, and both my dad and I were in the cast. I played one of the singing Von Trapp kids, and he played Captain Von Trapp himself. I'd never been in a play before, and while I was excited, I was also nervous as all get out. I mean, what if I looked silly in my costume, or what if I forgot the words to the songs? That'd sure make me look silly. What if halfway through the rehearsals, the director thought, "Why did I ever cast this inexperienced performer in the play at all?" I mean, I'd sure feel silly if I knew people thought that about me. That's how I felt every day. And I never talked about it with anyone, because when I looked at all these other people in the play with me, they all looked so confident. So I did my best to pretend that's how it was for me, too. Well, I guess my nerves were kind of showing one day. I must have looked a little blue or a little troubled. And my dad picked up on it. He asked me what was wrong. And when I told him how nervous I was, he told me how nervous he was. The notion that my dad was nervous about being on stage had never even occurred to me. And you know what? I learned somehow or another that everyone in the show felt that way.
And furthermore, everyone in the show thought they were the only ones that felt that way. But no one was alone in how they felt. And knowing we were together in that, it made a world of difference. We could get through it together. Together, none of us felt silly anymore. And strangely, that's where Deb's story took me. Where will it take you? And who will you take along?
Live the conversation is guaranteed when we listen to stories on the Appleseed.
There's a lot yet to come on today's episode, but I wanted to take just a moment to introduce you to another one of the shows from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The show is called Constant Wonder. It's hosted by Marcus Smith, and in every episode of Constant Wonder, Marcus will have a riveting conversation with an individual whose life has been touched by the awe and wonder in nature, human nature, or the natural world. It's all phenomenal. Uncover captivating stories that shed light on the wonders of creation. And you'll walk away feeling a little awestruck yourself from just about every episode. It's Constant Wonder with Marcus Smith. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to Constant Wonder whenever you like. Get a little dose of awe. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio. Hi, Sam here, and I want to take just a moment to let you know about a new podcast from BYU Radio. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. And it's a podcast in which you hear stories from people who experienced something, either tough advice from a close friend or engagement with somebody on the other end of the political spectrum, conversations that made them really uncomfortable. But instead of backing away or getting angry or defensive, they kind of leaned in. They sort of stuck with the discomfort and heard out the person that was communicating with them. And they're glad they did. Not because it changed their position, because it clarified their own beliefs. And Uncomfy, the podcast, features stories of folks who engaged in that way. It's really helping me engage with a world in which division really seems to be the norm. Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us is the name of the podcast. And, you know, if you listen to the Appleseed, then you've heard us say stories bring us together. That's kind of how I feel about the conversations that happen on Uncomfy. You can find it wherever you might be listening. You can watch it on the BYU Radio app. It's a video and audio podcast. There are lots of great ways to engage with these conversations. Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. Check it out.
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the Appleseed.
Welcome back to the Appleseed, where we have a story even sillier than the last one. Tim Lowry brings us our last silly tale today, based loosely on an actual memory from his childhood, a fascination with the fizzing of Alka-Seltzer tablets from the medicine cabinet. See if you can tell where the memory ends and the tall tale begins. Here's Tim with his story, Drangio Man.
I used to plunder. Did you ever plunder when you were a little kid? You know what plundering is, right? Oh, plundering. That's when you sneak when your mama's not looking and you open up her pocketbook on the big side where the money is and you take out the lipstick, take the lid all the way off and push it all the way up and use it like a magic marker to draw pictures on the mirror. That's plundering. Or you could sneak in the kitchen and you could screw the lid off that biggest jar of white stuff and pour some of that powder out on the sink and then go 1, 2, 3, whoo, and it makes a big cloud that goes all over the sink and the counter. That's plundering. When I was a little kid, I was a good plunderer. One day, my mommy was running the vacuum cleaner, and she couldn't hear me, and so I decided I would plunder. I went into the bathroom, and I climbed up on the potty. Don't plunder in the potty. That's not a good place for plundering. And then I climbed up on the sink, and I opened up the little doorways where mommy keeps the medicine. And I took down a big box of medicine. I seen my mom take that stuff. I knew how to work it. So I filled up a glass with water, and then I opened up a package, and I took out two big pills that big around. And I plopped them down in the glass, and the water started going. And I thought, this looks like 7-Up. I think I'll drink it. So I put it right up to my mouth. It didn't taste like 7-Up. I thought maybe it needed more pills to make it taste better. So I opened up another package and put two more of those big pills down in the glass. And now the water was going, blah, 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 blah. It looked like extra good bubbly 7-Up. I put it right up to my mouth. You know what? I don't think this is how they make 7-Up. Do not try this at home. I poured it right in the sink and went, blah, 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 shh. And that gave me an idea. What if I filled the sink way up and put a lot of those big pills in there? So I turned on the H knob and the C knob, and the water came up and up and up, and then I turned it off quick, and I opened up 6 packages of the big pills and plopped them all in the sink, and the water was going... It looked like a washing machine without the lid on, and then it started to go right over in the floor. Uh-oh. I knew if my mom saw the mess I was making, she would make me get in big trouble, so I had to pull the plug and let it go. I listened real close. I pushed my sleeve way up past my elbow, and I listened again. My mom was still running the vacuum cleaner. She couldn't hear me. And I socked my hand down into the water, and all the bubbles were going, and that tickled, and it was fun. But I had to pull the plug and let it go. I found the plug, and I yanked it out. It sucked me down under the sinkhole. I was sucked down under the sinkhole where the pipes are twisted like the letter S. And my head was down where my feet were supposed to be. My feet were up where my head was supposed to be. And I was all twisted around in the middle. And the water was going, blah, 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 blah. And I started yelling, Mommy, get me out of this sinkhole. But my mommy couldn't hear me because she was in the living room running the vacuum cleaner. And then I heard it. It came up from down below. It tried to get me. I'm going to get you, little boy. I didn't know what that was. I didn't want to find out what that was. Mom, get me out of this sinkhole. My mom was running all over the house looking for the long stick with the sucker thing on the end of it. I'm going to get you, little boy. It was the Drangio Man. He lives in the septic tank, and he came up to get me. He was covered in hair and slime and had toothpaste all over him. Ah! My mom grabbed the stick with the sucker thing on the end of it, and she socked it over the hole, and she started to pull. And Drangio Man grabbed me by the ankles, and he started to drag me down. And I was stuck in the middle like a tug of war. But finally, my mom pulled hardest and sucked me up out of that sinkhole, cleaned me all up, and now... I don't ever plunder again.
Tim Lowry with his story, Drangio Man. And remember, while it makes for a fun, silly story, playing with stuff you find in the medicine cabinet isn't cool. If you're a kid, make sure you stay away from the medicine cabinet, except with help from your folks. Did anything silly ever happen to you? Who's the favorite silly person in your life? Has a little silliness ever helped you through a hard time? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. Email or message us with what stories came to mind for you. Our email address is theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed@byu.edu. Or, of course, you can leave a comment about the show. We might even share it. We want to thank Debs Newbold and Tim Lowry for giving us a good laugh today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.